Hello, and welcome to the TLT Scale Up Insights series of podcasts with me, Nina Searle, and my co-host, Andrew Jennings. Andrew and I are partners in the Fast Growth team here at TLT. We are a cross-jurisdictional UK team helping rapidly scaling businesses to manage the legal challenges that come with growth. In each episode, we'll dive into key topics that you're going to be thinking about as you grow your business and what you really need to know from a legal perspective. We share our insights and advice on the issues that clients bring to us on a daily basis and discuss them with experts, both from inside and outside the firm, drawing on their experience and the advice that they have found most valuable. We aim to work with our clients throughout their journey, supporting them from scale to sale. So whatever your business goals, this series will give you the insights you need to help you stay on course and achieve them. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have any questions about anything we discuss in the show, please do get in touch at scaleupinsights@tltsolicitors.com. Today, we're talking about heads of terms for an investment, and we are joined by Charlie Robinson from YFM Equity Partners. Thank you, Charlie, for sparing the time to come talk to us today. I might just start by handing over to you, if that's all right, for you to give a bit of an introduction to yourself.
Of course. So my name's Charlie Robinson, as Nina's just said, and I'm a partner at YFM Equity Partners. We're a small private equity house focused on the SME marketplace, providing a mix of growth capital and replacement capital cash out into a range of different companies all the way across the country. And we're pretty active investors, and we'll make between 8 to 10 new investments a year and have a portfolio of approximately 40 companies that we look after.
Great, thank you. So you're well placed then to talk to us about heads of terms and the ins and outs and the key messages that we need our listeners to take away.
So to start off today, Charlie, we're talking about heads of terms. Now, these are clearly a key document for anyone taking an investment into their company. And this will be a well-worn path for you. I'm sure you've negotiated and signed many heads of terms over the years. So do you want to give us a background on heads of terms as you see it and why they're important to companies and to investors?
Sure. I'll give you my take and perhaps you can correct me and point me in the right direction if I go off piste. But for me, the simplest way of talking about heads of terms is to say that they're effectively an agreement to agree. So they come at a relatively early stage of negotiations where you've been working with a business and perhaps got to a point where you feel like you want to engage and work towards a transaction. And actually, in the simplest sense, all you want to do in a suite of heads of terms is set out the key elements of a deal so that both parties, or however many parties there are involved, understand the kind of framework that everyone will be working towards. And of course, there's a huge number of different elements that you can build into that. But ultimately, if you're expecting people to commit time, effort, and money into a transaction process, however long that takes, then the only way you really want to do that is if you've got some framework that governs that phase of a deal and ultimately ends up being distilled into a few pieces of paper that people sign and commit to that will be called a heads of terms or whatever else you want to call it.
That's a good point, actually, because we've been talking about heads of terms, but they're known by many different names. We see them called memorandums of understanding or MOUs, letters of intent, LOIs, various different names, offer letters. I know the YFM style is an offer letter with detailed terms appended to it. Different investment houses will have different names, but essentially, whether it's a term sheet or a heads of terms, it's, as Charlie says, that broad framework of the principles that will apply to the transaction. I think, Andrew, we, looking at it from the legal side, see all shapes and sizes, some very brief heads of terms, some very detailed that go into all the ins and outs and have appendices after appendices. I think, you know, from my perspective, the more detailed, the better, because as the lawyers, we then know what we're putting into the documents and we know that there's not going to be any nasty surprises for either party. But there's definitely a balance, isn't there? Because you don't want to start negotiating the full terms of the document before you've really got into the weeds.
No, absolutely. And I think when you and I have discussed this previously, we've said about how often heads of terms can be akin to a courtship, that this is just looking to see, especially with an investor, what this will look like going forward. It can be instructive as to how you get on with the investor, how the investor gets on with the founders and with the company, and what the relationship will look like going forward. I think that some of the times when people, especially early stage companies, will look at heads of terms and just see it as a means to an end. Let's just sign the thing and get the money in, and then we can work out the details afterwards. I suppose from the lawyer side, our preference would be that founders can take a step back, look at the heads of terms, understand the transaction as a whole. Also, think through the relationship with the investors as well and how that will look. You know, not every deal is a good deal. They shouldn't just sign up just because it's the money is on the table, as lucrative as that can seem at the time, but to try and work out what's best for them rather than just signing up. And I think even for us, having heads of terms that are well thought through and negotiated and discussed means it can front load problems in a transaction where people have an understanding of where they're going to get to in all the transaction documents, and it won't be a case of their big surprises or further down the track that could maybe scupper a deal. We don't really want people to be coming out to, I imagine, to you, Charlie, or some other funder and say, you never said this, this is new, why is this on the table?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of the many points that you've just made, but just picking up on a couple in particular, the sort of process of raising capital for growth, sometimes it's a step into the unknown for the companies and the individuals involved. And it's also kind of a process, you know, which is critical often for the survival and growth of a business going forward. And it's not short term. So you're not talking about a sale of a company. You're talking about building a partnership with a investor base that could last for many years. It could be really short, could be less than that, could be long. So you need to build a relationship in kind of every form of engagement with the investor. And if it's a really awesome business that everyone's excited about, it could be a very competitive process. So from an investment perspective, from a private equity or venture capital side of things, you know, there's a point in a transaction where, you know, we've got our selling boots on. You know, we're trying to win hearts and minds, and we can do that in all kinds of different ways. At the point where you're selected as a preferred partner, then, you know, that dynamic shifts and you start talking a bit more as a buyer. And that's where you can start introducing some of the concepts that you've talked about that are kind of so important to understand. And I guess that's the second bit I wanted to pick up on, which is going through that process does inform you about the kind of relationship that you're going to have going forward, because you've got some quite thorny and meaty issues that you want to cover off then. And you know, rather than just writing a number on a napkin or kind of walking in with a giant charity check already signed, that's just not going to happen. And if you go through that kind of level of negotiation or understanding and you get through it, you know, it's another tick in the box in terms of the chance of that relationship working kind of for the longer term, which is clearly more, to some extent, more important than just getting the money in.
Absolutely. And you mentioned then that there can be some meaty or thorny issues, I think was the phrase that you used. And I think certainly having acted on both sides of these growth capital investments, there definitely are points that are more emotive, perhaps for founders, more challenging for investors to move on and to negotiate. If you think about it, in many ways, their interests are aligned because they want to grow this business, need the capital, but they both want to grow the business. They both want a lucrative exit. But in the very short term, they've kind of got competing interests because founders want as much freedom as they can have to continue to run the business the way they think is best. They want to suffer the minimal dilution to their equity shareholding. They want the best valuation. And the investor on the other side of the table obviously is not necessarily aligned with all of those objectives. It would be interesting to hear your perspective on some of those kind of thorny issues and from an investor perspective, why they're a feature of these kind of investments.
Sure. So I guess you've touched on a decent number of the things that founders will get concerned about, rightly. And, you know, protection of equity is super important, but so is not overselling yourself. And so is being realistic about what's required to bring someone to the table. And so is what happens to their shares if they leave, you know, what happens, you know, what kind of commitments they have to give to stand behind the information that they're providing. You know, all of these things are in our world, I guess, standard. But what sits behind all of them is, you know, wanting to make sure that you can get to the point of a successful investment and that you don't overcommit one way or another. And the only way, in my opinion, to get through that is to have decent advice And I kind of say that partly because I'm sat in a room with you guys, but also because I believe it. And having someone, you know, if I'm on the other side of the table, if I put myself in the shoes of a founder or a founder group of shareholders or a management team, it's really hard. You know, you're an expert in your business and you're expert in your field and you're pitching to a group of investors who are experts in theirs, arguably, with varying degrees of quality. And they will assume you understand concepts and that you understand that, you know, there are certain elements that are important for good reason to investors. And there's different ways of handling that. You can either steamroll it through or you can be aggressive and kind of take a hard line early. You know, that's not necessarily the most constructive way. How you get through that is through having people around you to sort of give you a feel for what's reasonable, what's normal, what you should be prepared to compromise on and what you shouldn't. And if you haven't got that, then that, I wouldn't say that's a red flag to us when we're starting to speak to companies, but it is informative in terms of the kind of type of process that you're going to have to run and the level of engagement you're going to have with the team. Ultimately, it's going to take longer and it's going to be higher risk as you go through that process of something going wrong.
Charlie, based on your experience of having negotiated heads of terms and having to find a path through those kind of thorny issues that you've spoken about, do you have any sort of cautionary tales or horror stories of heads of terms gone wrong?
No. I guess so. I think that there's a couple of points. I mean, I have had experience of deals not happening at the heads of terms stage. Again, for the reasons that I've just talked about. So I had an example where we had a founder, strong-willed founder, good guy, knew his business super well. We wanted to back him. He couldn't get his head around the concept that if he left the business in certain circumstances, he might have to give up his equity. And our approach there, and certainly my approach, is kind of one of pragmatism. And actually, he couldn't get his head around that, and we had to part ways. And that deal did end up getting done, and he didn't last the full distance in terms of that investment period, which wasn't a surprise. I guess that's one example. But the thing I see over and over again that really winds me up, I think, is the best way to put it, is getting to the point where you've agreed a suite of heads of terms and actually doing a really good job on it and then being very comprehensive. Kind of once you've done that, you've effectively agreed lots and lots of tricky stuff. You spend a long time on it. And then you go through the process of, you know, whatever, diligence, getting everything lined up for the actual transaction to take place. And then you get to a point where everyone goes, right, okay, let's revisit the heads of terms. And you get it thrown back in your face that, you've included something in the final legal documents that wasn't in the heads of terms. Now, that to me is a misunderstanding on both sides. And sometimes that's an example of bad advice or bad positioning, because as I said at the very start of this conversation, it's an agreement to agree. It's not a legally binding document, apart from some potential clauses around exclusivity and what you can and can't do and who you can't talk to. But you are going to learn more about each other through the process, and you are going to change your position on certain things. And I think, again, to my point about having good advice around the table, understanding that, you know, with reasonable basis, you've got the opportunity to open stuff up again and talk about it. And so you're kidding yourself if you think just by signing a set of heads of terms, the deal is done. That is not the case.
I think that's a good point to pick up, actually, the binding versus not binding nature of the heads of terms. As you say, we wouldn't expect them to be binding, say, for exclusivity, confidentiality, and costs. And I guess even though they're not binding, there needs to be a valid reason, doesn't there, to move away from what's in the heads. It's no good signing the heads of terms thinking, oh, well, it's only the heads, it's not binding, I can completely change my mind next week and that'll be fine. That, I don't think, is what you're saying, and certainly isn't our experience. But I think it needs to be borne in mind that it's just the next step of the journey. It's the next step in the commitment. So people are now going to begin to spend more resources, more time, more energy, incurring costs from advisors on the basis that this is a deal that looks like this and that they want to do. Now, as the investor progresses through that journey and their advisors start doing the due diligence, for example, things might come out of the diligence that change the investor's appetite, whether that's around the terms, whether that's about levels of control that they want to see going forward, whether that might even come down to valuation. that's always going to be a possibility because until the documents are signed, they're not binding. But I think some people have a misperception that because they're not binding, they're less important. But I think what we're saying is there needs to be a genuine and demonstrable need to move away.
That's, you're absolutely right. And thanks for pulling me up on that point, because I wouldn't want to repeat what you've just said, that it, you know, you need to go into this process with the right frame of mind. And as I said at the beginning, that kind of sets the tone. But my point is, you still learn things through it. You do due diligence for a reason. You spend more time with a company kind of for a reason. And if anything comes out of that process, then, you know, people should expect to be speaking about it and potentially be changing the terms one way or another, you know, potentially more in favor of the company, if that's valid and it does happen. But you can't expect to go from a 5-page set of heads of terms, 2-page, whatever it is, to have many thousands of pages of documentation that actually gets produced to get a deal across the line. All right, hundreds.
Obviously, I was going to pull you up on that.
But you can't, yeah, my point is there's a whole lot more to it. And again, repetition slightly, but just having the right spirit as you enter into that exclusivity phase and commitment phase and getting to know you phase is really important.
I think there are often key areas within the heads of terms that people would focus on and would be really high up on their priority list. Maybe it'd be helpful just to pick up on a few of those together. I suppose from a founder's perspective, and it links in with what you said with your example, Charlie, as to a founder and the impact of their shareholding, dilution of their shareholding, but also their element of sort of operational control. Often within heads, you will see how the board will be composed, and they'll be thinking about how many of their, in inverted commas, people are on the board as opposed to investors and how decisions are made. Then also those sort of, as we would call them, reserve matters or areas over which an investor would want a veto to be able to say, well, this is so important, so material to the business, we have put money in, therefore we want to have a say. And just about how the impact that has, even day to day, and the mindset shift for founders as they carry on their business. I think there is real value in having that discussed through and them to be able to get on board with that and realize that there is going to be a change as to how their business is run. And whilst the business is attractive to an investor because of what they have done to date, in order to get them to where they all want to get to, a real success point, the goalpost may have to move somewhat.
Sure, yeah. I think that's absolutely right. And from a YFM perspective, we're generally a minority stake investor. We don't take control in, you know, from an equity perspective, which then kind of flows through everything else normally if you do that. So we'll take minority stakes. We don't have kind of effective control. And so how we work with our companies is through building engagement, you know, face-to-face, but backed up by some kind of legal framework, governance framework. And there's a huge range in the industry about what people do and don't want. So I won't dwell on that too much, other than to say most private equity houses and venture capital houses are pretty reasonable, and the things that they're asking for shouldn't be controversial, shouldn't be upsetting, but will take a little bit of getting used to when you sort of read them off the page. So having the ability to appoint someone to the board, well, that's fair enough. If you're taking on someone else's money and risk capital and using it in your business, as is kind of very often the case and for the scale-up marketplace, then you should expect that investor to have some kind of requirements. And so in general, from an investor perspective, what's difficult is trying to justify every single one of those, because life's too short. Once you've got, you know, sensible group of managers who understand the bits that are really, really important to them, then we're really happy to have a conversation about that in depth and take them through it. And hopefully you kind of reach a common ground, or you get to a point where actually you work out that you're not going to agree, and maybe that's time to look for someone else to back you, or a different source of funding. There are other options out there, and venture capital and private equity isn't for everyone. Again, this heads of terms process does help inform you of that. And if you're getting the wrong kind of feeling about how intrusive in your eyes as a management team that you know, having someone else around the table is going to be, then don't do it.
I think that's a fair perspective. Thinking about it from the founder's from the founding team's perspective, although there is that sort of, I suppose you could look at it as compromise in that you have now got to be accountable to your investor, because in turn your investor is accountable to their investors for the money that's been sort of flown down into your business. And I think that's important to remember the context. But it can be a great asset to have an investor director on your board. And indeed it should be, because your investor director will probably also have other, or the investor will have other investments in the same space likely in their portfolio. They've been through this process with other businesses. They've been through the sort of the hurdles and the challenges that your business might face as it scales. It'll be potentially the first time you've encountered those things. But in all likelihood, your investor director and the team from the investor has experienced them before, and they are aligned with you in wanting you and your business to successfully overcome those hurdles. So it can, on the flip side, be a great asset. It's just as Andrew said, getting your head in the right space, flipping your mindset into working as a sort of as a team and working in collaboration. And that's the process, as you say, from the heads of terms when you're sort of negotiating with each other to the point where you come together at the end and you're working together to move the business forward.
Well, that's a super awesome pitch for private equity and venture capital and the benefits that it brings. So I won't kind of dwell on that, because I couldn't do as good a job if I tried. But, you know, we are pretty good at what we do as an industry. There's a reason that we talk about providing, you know, more than just capital. And, you know, we all have a lot of resource to draw from, both in terms of situational experiences of what goes on, you know, once you're involved with a business, and in terms of people that we know that and can use to sort of help businesses grow. So that's all cool. But you don't often get to a point where you're sort of, yeah, to go back to my sort of previous example of where things have gone wrong. That doesn't happen that often. So in general, you find a way through these thornier issues or meatier issues kind of early on. And it is my massive preference to do more work earlier on the heads of terms. And you just, you have those difficult conversations, you get through it, you agree what it's going to be like. And as part of that process, it's very likely that the management team will have taken references on you about how you act, how you behave, what you're like as an individual or as a house, good, bad, indifferent, whatever that is. And they still make the call that they want to go forward. Yeah, that's a decent sign. And so everyone's kind of going into this heads of terms phase with pretty positive momentum anyway. You're then dealing with some potentially tough conversations about levers and warranties and consents and how involvement, all that kind of stuff. But it's not often that you do fall out about these things at that stage. You might have some difficult conversation, but you generally, you know, work out what, you know, a sensible position, and you crack on.
I think in going sort of longer on the heads of terms stage, it does help in terms of the communication piece, for everyone to understand where everyone's coming from, so that whenever you come to those difficult issues around your lever, around like information rights and your decision making, that everyone knows where everyone's coming from to be able to decide what is a key issue that absolutely needs to be included and what can be compromised on. And touching on the earlier point, I think that's where good advice is key, because especially for founders who, you know, they excel in their given area, to then throw these phrases at them can be jarring enough to be able to walk them through that, to understand the rationale and the basis for it, and also even to put their minds at rest that this is a well-worn path, and this is the way that, you know, if they were to take references from other portfolio companies, they would get a very similar story. It can ease them through. I know, having had a very difficult conversation with a number of founders who really struggle with this idea of lever and the reverse vesting, the thought, well, hold on, if you sack me on day one, I could be out at an incredibly heavy discount. And I've spent the last X number of years in my garage trying to build this business. And I suppose just the way that can be managed through is to understand that, well, actually, you know, this is a partnership. This is money that's being introduced and injected in order to take you to a level that you couldn't otherwise get to. And this is for the benefit of us all. And we know where we want to get to. We've looked at your projections and we think that they could be done. And therefore, that can help to sort of assuage any fear that this is just, you know, a big bad investor come and eat their dinner and take the family jewels.
Yeah, we're not like that at all. But yeah, again, you raise a good point, and I think that your job as advisors is to paint the picture and build scenarios and say, look, okay, well, they could technically do that, to use your example, but why would they? I mean, day one, I mean, really? Are they that smart that they know straight away that you're not going to be able to deliver on your forecast? Well, why would they take that risk anyway? So there's always a way of kind of helping people along to get to sort of a comfortable position. I say comfortable, you always should feel a bit uncomfortable about some of this stuff because it's serious, but a position that they're sort of okay with moving forward with. And the other thing is, all investors are different. All venture capital providers, scale up guys, private equity houses have a different approach. And working with someone who's got a broader experience of different houses and individuals is kind of really helpful because you're in a position where you can say, okay, this particular area is a red line for YFM for these reasons. And sometimes they're not always that great. Sometimes it is how it is, and you're just going to have to live with it. But over here in this area, you've got the ability to compromise because they're more relaxed about X, Y, Z. And you kind of, this is where we should focus our time and attention. That can take, so much out of a process. And I think there will be a lot of hard work for lawyers and advisors, behind the scenes that we hopefully the investor won't see and shouldn't see it. Should be focusing on the really, really important stuff. And sometimes we're a bit ignorant and don't think about how much goes into it before a deal opportunity comes to us and how much work's been done already. But I wouldn't want to belittle it. It's really important.
Charlie, it's been fascinating to hear an investor's perspective. Thank you so much for your time today and for the conversation. I'm sure it's really useful to the people who are listening. Just as we look to close this podcast, if there was one piece of advice that you could give to a founder looking for investment or who's just heads of terms have just landed, if they're really lucky, three sets of heads have just landed for them to compare and contrast, what would your advice be, your one piece of advice?
Just one?
Just one.
Oh.
Or maybe two.
Can I have two?
Go on then.
All right. I mean, the first one is to get good advice. But I'm sort of assuming that you're assuming that we've already got good advice to get to that point. So my second one is to be pragmatic and try and put yourself in the shoes of the people on the other side of the table, as we try to do. Don't always get it right. You're not gonna. But if you go in with that mindset, then you've got, number one, a good chance of getting through that negotiation of heads of terms. And number two, in my opinion, a good chance of building a strong relationship that informs how well you're going to work together going forward.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Charlie.
Absolute pleasure. Loved it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Scale Up Insight podcast. If you have any questions about anything we discussed in the show, please get in touch at scaleupinsights@trtsolicitors.com. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please rate us and leave us a review on your podcast app. It means that more people can find us and take a listen. The information in this podcast is for general guidance and represents our understanding of the relevant law and practice at the time of recording. We recommend you seek advice in specific cases. Please visit our website for our full terms and conditions.